Welcome to Carituals. This is Wendy.
And this is Sarah.
Today's cast, how to answer questions about difficult co-workers in an interview.
The questions this cast answers are, why are hiring managers asking questions about difficult co-workers? How do I answer questions about my colleagues' difficult behavior in interviews? And how do I structure a behavioral interview answer?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Just starting on your career journey, our Career Tools license is crafted just for you, offering the support you need to make your early professional steps with ease and confidence. Dive into our interviewing series, where we break down each stage of the interview process, from initial preparation to successful follow-up. These insights will give you the edge you need to stand out and secure your ideal job. The relationship with your first boss is crucial to your career trajectory. Our Effective Relationship series provides practical advice on building and maintaining these critical professional relationships. Additionally, our podcasts cover a variety of topics, from personal productivity to enhancing presentation skills, ensuring you have the tools you need to succeed. No matter your starting point, we provide the pathway to a successful career. Start strong and gain the confidence needed to thrive with the right resources at your fingertips. Visit us online today at manager-tools.com to learn more.
This cast is our guidance on how to answer that interview question. Describe a situation where you had to work with a difficult colleague or team member. Or sometimes there's like a similar question, like tell me about a project where you had to work with a difficult person, or tell me about a customer relationship that was difficult and how you resolved it. Those kind of questions.
Yeah.
And I looked on the internet and an internet survey of the top 10 questions asked in interviews. This was number two.
Wow.
Which to me, I was like, do all these hiring managers have difficult people on their team that they know these new hires are going to have to work with?
Every organization has difficult people, Wendy.
That's what I was like, oh, okay. So whether or not this should be the most popular question or the second most popular question is a question for manager tools. So we're not going to go there today, but we're going to tell you how to answer if you are asked this question.
Mm-hmm. Which it sounds like you likely will be.
Yes.
All right. So today's outline. First, we're going to talk about answer the question, then decode the real question first, choose your example, construct your answer, and avoid the pitfall.
And when we tell you to prepare for your interviews, when you listen to this, you'll understand why. Because there's quite a lot of preparation that you need to do in order to answer this question effectively. And you do have to answer the question that is asked.
Yes.
If you thought we were going to give you some clever, evasive way out of answering this question, you were wrong. You might as well stop listening if that's what you wanted.
Mm-hmm. The way I think about interviews, folks, is interviews are a fictitious reality designed to help the hiring manager, the interviewer in this case, determine whether or not you'd be a good fit here, which means hiring managers ask this question because they want an answer. You don't get extra points for being clever and evasive. A hiring manager must assume everything you do in an interview is a demonstration of what you'll do if you get the job working here with our organization. All the evidence they have to decide whether you can work on their team comes from your resume, references potentially, and your interview. That's what they're daring to do, figure out whether or not you'd be a good fit here.
Yeah.
So you should assume everything that you do in an interview demonstrates how you'll perform at work. It's the only chance you get. It's the only chance they get to determine how's this person probably going to work if we give them the job here. Being evasive doesn't just avoid the question. It actively sends the wrong message about the way you work with others and damages trust before you even start the job, if you even get the job.
Exactly. You should lie. The likelihood of you getting the job goes down.
Yeah, exactly.
Because who wants a person on their team who is evasive about
what
they're doing?
Untruthworthy,
right?
A little bit shady, sketchy. No one wants that.
Right. Because if you're clever and evasive, when asked a straightforward question, they'll make assumptions about your future behavior because they have to, because that's what interviews are for.
Yeah.
And so the extrapolation is, if your manager says, is the report done? you'll answer yes. And you don't necessarily mean the report's complete and sent to the right people and the necessary tracking is done, because clever people answer yes and decide that the word done means anything they want. It's like all the people who think Friday at 5 p.m. is Monday at 8 a.m. for a deadline. I have to say, like, all of us have done that, but, you know, we try not to say that in interviews. So this this word twisting erodes trust. If you actually get the job and you're working with a team, twisting the words and pretending that one thing means another thing erodes the trust and the professional relationships. And if you do it in an interview, the interviewer can only assume that you'll do it at work. So that's not the impression you want to give.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. All right. So now, Wendy, you kind of alluded to this at the introduction piece of today's guidance. There's a little bit of pre-thought, pre-work that goes into answering this question in order for you to deliver a good answer to the question. If you don't understand the purpose of or the point of the question, then answering it isn't going to be very easy. Right. Now, understanding behavioral interview questions is fundamentally different from technical questions. With technical questions, the interviewer wants to know if you can perform a specific task. It's usually a clear yes or no, but behavioral interview questions are much broader, and the purpose of them is instead to elicit a range of behaviors that you might bring to bear successfully to solve a situation that you're likely to encounter should you start working here.
Because there's a number of ways to solve a problem with a difficult person, if you think about it. Like, there's the good one, which is with this negotiation and rational conversation. There's also role power. If you had it, you could just say, we're doing it my way, be quiet. There's also giving in to whatever that person did because you want the quid pro quo of something else. So the hiring manager needs to know how you solve these kind of problems, because they need to know whether or not that will work. They already know their organization and they know which techniques work better. So when they say, describe a situation where you had to work with a difficult colleague, it's not just asking a story. It's actually designed to find out about what HR calls competencies and everybody else calls things I can do. Things like interpersonal skills, conflict resolution abilities, your professionalism, how you approach situations, your empathy and emotional intelligence, and your ability to maintain productivity even when other people are being difficult. So when they ask that question, they want the answers to all of those questions.
Yeah, exactly. A much more well-rounded answer. You can't give an effective answer if you don't understand this broader purpose to the question, because the interviewer isn't just looking for an interesting story about a time when you had a past job and you worked with a difficult coworker. They're assessing how you handle difficult situations at work and stay productive even when things get challenging. So the example you choose and the answer you give needs to answer those underlying questions, as well as talking about this situation. The situation is built to paint a picture of something you've done in the past. The purpose of behavioral interview questions is to ask you about something you've done in the past, because the most likely thing a person will do in the future is the behavior they employed in the past. That's why they ask them. They're making assumptions. It's all we can do.
We need to choose an example carefully so that it both answers the question, this is me working with someone who was difficult, and also answers those questions about how do I do these things? What kind of skills do I bring to bear on this kind of situation? So now you have to think about your work history and you have to think for suitable examples. And this is why we tell you to prepare ahead of time, because there's nothing worse as an interviewer as to ask the question. Well, there's lots of things worse, but one of the most irritating things to me was asking a question and then waiting for them to find an example and knowing that in their brain, they're saying, I can't use that one. I can't use that. Oh, she's waiting for me. I need to hurry up. What am I going to say? And I could see it on their face. And I wanted, it's all right. Take your time. Like, I need an answer to this question, but I'm willing to wait for you to give me the right example. You can circumvent that by having done the preparation first and thought of the examples.
Exactly.
So the first example, the first thing you want to make sure is that the example is an example where you solved the problem by what you did. You actively solved the problem because this question is about your conflict resolution skills. So you don't want to use a story where you prevailed because the person quit or they were moved or they were fired, because that's not you negotiating or resolving a situation. That's you having a narrow escape. I bet. Mm-hmm,
yeah,
if you could think exactly. of one of those situations, yeah. you were like,
I lucked out.
Yes. The day I knew they were moving, I had a deep breath and thought, my life's going to be better. So that's not the example to use. The hiring manager wants to see how you work through difficulties, not how you waited them out and avoided them. So you need to be able to draw a clear cause and effect line between the situation, what you did, and the resolution. So you have to be an active part of the solution.
Exactly. Not only do you want to choose an example where you solve the problem, you want to choose a situation that was genuinely challenging. What you want to consider challenging, or what you would consider challenging, tells the hiring manager a lot about you. So if you describe, for example, a mild disagreement, but the way you describe it makes it seem like your interpretation was that it was a major conflict, or if you're talking about a colleague and you label them difficult because they asked you to meet appropriate deadlines, you're really revealing more about yourself than you are about your colleague. So you want it to be genuinely challenging. Like, the interviewer will also think to themselves, whoa, that sounds like a tricky situation to overcome.
Exactly.
Because if they think it's too simple, it won't showcase your skills here.
Right. And also, if it's too complex, it'll be too long an answer and too complicated for them to follow. So there is a balancing out there. So then the next one is choose a situation that allows you to tell a broader story about your professionalism. So you want to choose a situation where you are getting real work done. Because a good answer isn't just about managing the difficult relationship. It should show how you kept projects moving, how you kept work moving, and achieved the results despite the challenges. So if you tell a story that's just about your personal conflict, that doesn't help as much as examples where you maintained or even improved the productivity while handling the interpersonal issues. I had an example somebody said to me when I was working, before I worked here, obviously, they said to me, I needed data. And they said, I'm not giving you anything because I don't like your boss. And I was like, okay, well, my answer needs to, how did I address that person and working together with that person, and also get the data that I needed to produce the reports that I needed to produce? So that would be an example.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. And folks, listen, when you're asked this question, the situation you'd like to employ as an example ought to meet these other three criteria, but it doesn't have to directly, perfectly match the question if you haven't a good example of it being a colleague, someone that was on your team at a peer level. Don't limit yourself to your direct coworkers when you're thinking about choosing these examples. The key to the answer here, what they're looking for, doesn't matter whether the person was officially a member of the team. It's more about how you handled an ongoing working relationship that was challenging. And that could be with a vendor you dealt with regularly, a client contact you dealt with, someone from another department with whom you collaborated often. What really matters is you had to interact with them regularly enough for the problems to impact your work. You had some ability to influence the situation, and you took active steps to improve things. The real test of this is whether you can show how you handle difficult professional relationships that affect your work, not whether or not the person sat at the very next desk beside you.
And a lot of the time, these answers aren't about direct colleagues, because working with someone day in, day out, you've already rubbed off the rough corners. Mm-hmm. And if necessary, your boss will come in and stamp on them. It's often relationships that are one step removed. So another team or a contractor where you have this kind of friction because you've both got different objectives.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Did you know that we offer Project Management Institute credits with our organizational training? In this day and age, experience matters. And we can afford all attendees in any of our organizational trainings with PMI accreditation. Want more information? Contact Maggie by emailing her at maggie@manager-tools.com.
So now we're going to tell you how to construct your answer. It's not complicated, but we're not going to tell a story from beginning to end. We're going to start with the conclusion, not the story. So it's not a novel. We're not doing bedtime stories where we start at the beginning and we walk through the forest and eventually we find the house. We're going to start with the conclusion. So we're going to give you three examples here, and we're going to give you each piece of the answer as we go. So at the end of the show notes, if you have a license for Career Tools, you'll have the show notes and you'll have the complete answer, the complete examples. So, but the first part of this, if I give you an example of beginning with the conclusion, I resolved a strained relationship between me and a former colleague turned vendor by focusing on clear communication and role definition. So now the hiring manager knows, okay, this is the story you're going to tell me, and this is the summation of it.
Another way we think about or talk about that at Manager Tools is bottom line up front.
Yes,
like a
exactly.
One sentence encapsulation of the situation before you launch into your story about what happened. So another example, I resolved the stakeholders' resistance to the introduction of a new automated system by involving them in the redesign.
Okay, and the last one, I resolved a situation with a data analyst who was chronically late with their reporting by addressing underlying process issues. So they all have, I resolved the situation, because that's a nice way to introduce it, with a description of the situation and then how what you use to resolve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, the next piece then, after we've given this nice encapsulating sentence to begin, we then give a little bit more context. We want to give the interviewer enough context to understand why the conflict occurred and the relationship between the parties involved. So, for example, in this role, I worked with a colleague whose role was outsourced to a contractor, but we still needed to collaborate daily. Our previously equal relationship had changed. Now they were technically a vendor. This change strained our interactions and affected our work.
It's a fairly short description, but it's enough context to understand who those people were and what you were supposed to be doing. So here's another example. In this role, I worked closely with another department head who initially resisted our team's automated reporting system, which had replaced a manual process they developed and managed over years. It's a nice example because it's one that's fairly... who hasn't had a system that they designed that they feel is my baby and I don't want anyone to touch it? And then somebody comes along and says, okay, we're going to do it this way now.
Right? This is terrible. I want to destroy it. And it can even be a little bit shorter, folks. So for example, in this role, I collaborated with a highly skilled data analyst who consistently delivered late, creating bottlenecks for our monthly reporting cycle.
It's short enough, but it's still enough context to know what was going on. And obviously, when we say in this role, you would say when I was at wherever you were or in the role of IT director, whatever your job was. Don't say in this role because that sounds a bit weird, but just replace that. So now the interviewer knows what the situation was. They have the summation in their head. They know where we're going. They have the context so they can see the picture of what the situation was. And now we're going to talk about the steps that you took. So you walk through your specific actions and decisions grouped by the skills that you're demonstrating. So I think Mark calls this the Chinese answer, where you go, and then, and it, when you're telling a story and you say, this happened, and this happened, and then this happened, it's from a movie. But if you tell it that way, the interviewer has to join up in their heads the different times that you showed the same skill. Whereas if you group it by skills, it's much more obvious which skill you're trying to tell them about.
Okay, so let's go back and let's take our first example. I resolved a strained relationship between me and a former colleague turned vendor by focusing on clear communication and role definition. In this role, I worked with a colleague whose role was outsourced to a contractor, but we still needed to collaborate daily. Our previously equal relationship had changed. Now they were technically a vendor. This change strained our interactions and affected our work. And you would then continue by describing how. So, for example, you set up structured discussions to understand their perspective and created clear documentation for your new working relationship, which showcases communication skills.
And then perhaps you recognize their feelings about being demoted to vendor status and acknowledge the awkwardness of your changed dynamics, which is all about empathy and interpersonal skills.
Mm-hmm. You could also do one about problem solving, showcasing your problem solving abilities. You developed new workflows that respected both your needs and established clear boundaries while maintaining collaboration.
And lastly, you took initiative to address the tension proactively and gained agreement around the new working patterns. So that's leadership or working collaboratively. Rather than saying, well, we had this fight and then I thought I better go and fix the problem. And so I suggested this and then he suggested that and we worked together until we had a solution. It's not a good answer because it doesn't show the skills that you used effectively enough, as well as being a bit surface level, because I just made it up in my head. which is what happens if you are in an interview and you make the answer up as you go along. If you haven't practiced it, if you haven't thought all of this through, you end up surface level and you don't showcase all the skills that you really have.
Mm-hmm. And Wendy, didn't you say at the beginning of this cast, it's the second most asked question?
Exactly. So you can guarantee you're going to get it, right?
Yeah. Let's just all assume you're going to be asked this question and prepare a few answers that are possible or you could potentially use to fulfill what they ask you so you're not grasping. And again, folks, when we're giving these descriptions, instead of saying, first I talked to them, then we documented things, then we tried new workflows, we've organized by competencies we want to highlight. Each category demonstrates a skill the interviewer is actually assessing. Again, going back to the purpose of this question.
Exactly.
So, for example, I took the initiative to address the tension proactively and gained agreement for new working patterns. I set up structured discussions to understand their perspective while acknowledging their feelings about the shift to vendor status. Just being listened to helped them feel less judged. Once we had a communication flow, I developed new workflows with them that took into account the new rules of our relationship. All of this helped us continue working together productively, even though our relationship had changed.
I just want to congratulate myself for such a great answer. Because it is a really great answer.
It is a really great answer. Exactly. And it gives the interviewer what they need, which is the most important piece of it, right?
And it also gives them hooks to probe on more things. So for instance, if they were particularly interested in people who were able to create workflows, then they could say, hey, so you introduced some new workflows. How did you go about that? And then you can go into more detail showcasing that skill. So because you've described a bunch of competencies and several different parts of the situation very clearly, it makes it really easy for the interviewer to follow up with the things that they're really interested in. So we'll go back to the one about resolving the stakeholders' resistance to the introduction of the new automated system. So the next part of that, describing what I did, would be, instead of pushing through the change, I asked them to help identify gaps in the automated system. And by showing that I valued their deep process knowledge, they became willing to suggest improvements. And whenever I could, I implemented the suggestion, even if it wasn't technically on the critical path or I really needed it. I just gave them the opportunity and I then worked through that. This turned them from a critic into an advocate, and we ended up with a stronger system that combined the best of automation with the years of hands-on experience that they had.
Mm-hmm. And then taking us back to the example we're using here about the highly skilled data analyst who consistently delivers late and causes bottlenecks. Instead of escalating the delays, I sat down to understand their workflow changes. It turned out they were juggling unclear requests and competing priorities from multiple teams. We decided to do two things. First, together we created a standard request template and a clear prioritization system. Then we added a brief weekly check-in to help us spot issues early. The analyst felt supported rather than criticized, and we started getting better quality work on time.
And those last two answers both begin with instead of, and then give another way to solve that problem. And we said at the beginning, there are a bunch of different ways to solve a problem. And the instead of is the most obvious one, or perhaps the one that somebody would think that you would have done. And then the rest of it describes what you actually did, which hopefully showcases more of the competences. So now that you've told them exactly what you did, you can give more detail. So it depends what your answer is, whether or not it needs more detail. So if you know that the interviewer is particularly interested in workflows because that's the third bullet on the job description,
Then
from that first example, you might say, let me tell you more about those, how I developed those workflows. Other times, it's just because whatever you've just described, you know, is complex enough that it needs more description. So particularly if you have a technical interview with a technical manager and you describe the sort of people resolution, but you know that part of their question or part of what will go on in their mind is, well, how did you solve it technically as well? If you can see that that would be two parts of the question. So we have an example here. I understand the first part. I have to confess, ChatGPT wrote the second part. It's very good. I can read it and understand it and understand that it's a good thing, because I used to do technical interviews with people. And in a way, you don't actually have to understand the technical stuff because you have a technical manager with you. You just have to understand the people stuff. So I'm going to tell you, it's a good answer, but I don't necessarily know what all the words mean. So if I read it wrong, hopefully you'll forgive me. So I resolved friction between my team and another over API versioning by creating a collaborative solution process. So the situation was the mobile team was frustrated by frequent breaking changes in our APIs, and my backend team felt pressured to release new features rapidly. So I set up joint planning sessions where the mobile team explained the App Store release cycle and the limitations of that, and we shared our product deadline pressures. And that really helped both sides to see the bigger picture, and it reduced the tensions immediately, which allowed us to get to a technical solution. So on the technical side, I proposed and implemented a versioning strategy that balanced both teams' needs. We used URI versioning for major changes, but header versioning for the minor ones, allowing the mobile team to manage their update cycle whilst giving us flexibility for the small improvements. I built a version routing layer that automatically directed requests to the appropriate handler based on both the URI and the headers. And we created automated tests that would flag breaking changes during CI/CD runs, catching compatibility issues before deployment. So the combination of better communication and practical technical solutions turned the contentious relationship into a really productive partnership.
Yeah, it was really good, Wendy. His pronunciations on all of those technical things. I didn't understand them either. So see there, folks, you can see that Wendy's giving more elaboration, either because the interviewer has asked her for more elaboration, or she feels as though it might be necessary, or even if you're not too nervous and you're answering the question, and as you're answering it, you can see the wheels turning in their mind, the gears kind of, they want to ask something and they may not. Having that ready to elaborate in those cases adds a huge value to your answer.
Yeah. And you might need two or three technical sort of deep dives if the interviewer follows up on those specific things. Like they may have asked more about the tracking system, or they may ask more about the app store, which app store you were using and what was the release cycle and why was it that, you know, maybe that's the bit that they're really interested in. So knowing the job description tells you what's important to the hiring manager. Because if it's not important, they don't put it on the job description.
Yeah, and exactly.
The further up the thing is, the more important it is. So whatever's in the first couple of bullets is the most important things to the hiring manager. So if your answer includes one of those things, be ready to have more detail and be able to follow up. Or even proactively, you know, give the answer.
Exactly. All right. So now Folks, one thing we do want to cover while we're talking about this question, having a difficult coworker question, is the pitfall. We want you to avoid the major pitfall. The pitfall being you spend too much time talking about what your colleague did and not enough time talking about what you did. You want to be careful not to criticize, belittle, or speak negatively about your colleague, even if their behavior was problematic. And remember, it's because the interviewer is assessing you, the way you're most likely to behave if you work in our organization. And highlighting your colleague's faults makes you appear unprofessional and raises concerns about how you view and treat other people. Instead, don't focus on them. Focus on the situation that needed to be resolved. Your understanding of their perspective, the steps you took to improve things, and the positive outcome you achieved.
Because remember, then they are not assessing your colleague's behavior. They are evaluating your ability to handle challenging situations professionally and productively. And you have to say, this person was chronically late with reports, because otherwise they don't have the context. But you don't have to say, this person never picked up the phone, never replied to my emails, was always late, and he was nasty to me in meetings too. Now, you don't have to go into all the detail. You just have to give enough context and then don't bash them.
Yeah, exactly. Don't bash them actively in the interview. It's not about the colleague. It's about you. Okay, so up until this point, we've been giving you broken down examples as we've been building this one true answer, if you will. Now, we're going to give you full examples, start to finish, which are pieced together of all of the components we previously gave you broken down. So, I'm going to read full example number one. Well, I resolved a strained relationship between me and a former colleague turned vendor by focusing on clear communication and role definition. In my previous role, I worked with a colleague whose role was outsourced to a contractor, but we still needed to collaborate daily. Our previous equal relationship had changed. Now they were technically a vendor. This change strained our interactions and affected our work. And so, I took the initiative to address the tension proactively and gained agreement for new working patterns. I set up structured discussions to understand their perspective while acknowledging their feelings about the shift to vendor status. Just being listened to helped them feel less judged. Once we had a communication flow, I developed new workflows with them that took into account the rules of our relationship. All this helped us to continue working together productively, even though our relationship had changed.
Well done, Sarah. You get the job.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to read example number two. I resolved a stakeholder's resistance to the introduction of a new automated system by involving them in the redesign. So in this role, I was working closely with another department head who initially resisted our team's new automated reporting system, which replaced the manual process that they developed and managed for years. Instead of pushing through the change, which I could have done, I had the power to do that, but I decided not to, and I asked them to help me identify gaps in the automated system. And by showing them that I valued their deep process knowledge, they became willing to suggest improvements. And whenever they suggested one, I tried to implement it, even if it wasn't on the critical path. This turned them from a critic into an advocate, and we ended up with a stronger system that combines the best of automation with the years of hands-on experience that they had. Mm-hmm. That is one way you can imagine the next follow-up would have been, what was the automated system that you were trying to bring in? Because that's potentially part of this job that you're applying for.
Yeah. And that follow-up or that them digging in is dependent on the interviewer and could be different from day to day for any one of them. Can't really predict it, but you probably should have it ready. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then example number three, start to finish. Well, I resolved the situation with a data analyst who was chronically late with their reporting by addressing underlying process issues. In that role, I collaborated with a highly skilled data analyst who consistently delivered late, creating bottlenecks for our monthly reporting cycle. Instead of escalating the delays, I sat down to understand their workflow challenges. Well, it turned out they were juggling unclear requests and competing priorities from multiple teams. So we decided to do two things. First, together we created a standard request template and a clear prioritization system. Then we added a brief weekly check-in to help us spot issues early. The analyst felt supported rather than criticized, and we started getting better quality work on time.
Again, you get the job. So answering this question actually isn't difficult. You just start with the conclusion, give the context, say what you did, and add the detail where required. But what you have to do is have thought about those examples ahead of time and practiced so that you can answer the question with ease. If you don't practice, I can tell you, having sat in thousands of interviews probably, the answer comes across as, well, let me go back and tell you about this. I have to tell you. And then I did, and it just is so bitty, it's really hard to follow the situation.
Yeah.
So, and if you practice, you don't sound rehearsed. It's not like you sound like you're reading the news.
Yeah.
You sound natural because that's what we do anyway. If you think about it, if you are about to phone somebody, you have that conversation in your head first. You think, okay, I need to tell them this and this and this if you want to have a productive phone call. So, and you don't think, oh, I'm going to sound rehearsed if I think this through first. That's the same in an interview. You sound more fluent and like you really did understand the situation and what the drivers were of change rather than someone who's telling a story in the pub and isn't quite sure where they're going when they start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. And I mean, folks, when you're answering these questions, to find a good example, one that fits all the previous criteria, isn't that easy. It's not like you've thought about this situation you had with a past difficult colleague over and over and over throughout the course of the years. I mean, this could have happened 4 years ago. Going back and refreshing your memory of the situation is incredibly necessary, in my opinion, if you're going to be able to even talk through what actually happened. It's not rote memorization. It's not, I write it down and I rehearse it till I can say it like a speech. It's going back, remembering the situation, walking through that in your mind and creating the three parts.
Exactly. So hopefully you'll now be successful when you get this question, since it's the second most popular question. You're almost guaranteed to get it. And hopefully we've given you enough to help you be successful. So that's all for this week. Join us next week when we'll cover a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.